Okay, so the material we looked at presents this really powerful, disturbing dual narrative. You've got the legend of the Ascendant, this child rescued from a cult in 93.
And then you compare that against the clinical records, the actual life of Samuel Kent, leading up to his very risky adult behaviors.
Right, it's compelling stuff. Let's jump straight into the first structural point, concerning that gap in time.
Yeah, that temporal bridge.
Exactly. The narrative structure, it really needs a stronger emotional bridge between that initial trauma, which is so mythologized, and the adult's absolute conviction later on.
Right, we need to feel how he got there, how Samuel Kent became so determined to sort of prove the legend was the real story.
And the weakness right now is that it feels abrupt. You go from the rescue, 7 years old, the underground room, the S-shaped mark, the whole cult trial survival thing.
Straight to the adult footage, the walking into fire, the standing in traffic. It just jumps.
Yeah, it's almost jarring. And in doing that, it kind of rushes past what must have been the most critical period internally.
That's where he must have wrestled with it all, where he seemingly chose to reject the medical file, the nerve desensitization, the healed fractures, and reclaim the ascendant identity.
That internal conversion, that choice, we don't see it develop. If the myth is driving him, we need to see the engine turning over, you know?
So the suggestion, looking at it methodologically, is maybe slow down right there in those transition years.
Okay.
Don't just present the clinical records, the care records, as like background facts. Make them the conflict.
Ah, so the file is the antagonist?
In a way, yes. Focus the narrative on that battle, the myth inside him versus the official record trying to define him, the man versus his file.
But wait, if we slow down too much there, do we risk losing momentum? That adult footage is shocking. We don't want to dilute its impact.
That's a fair point. But I think you can treat the records not just as static documents, but as things he had to actively fight against.
How do you mean?
Well, dedicate some space to showing how that conflict played out, the ascendant belief versus the assigned Samuel Kent identity. Use those clinic notes.
The nerve desensitization, the healed fractures.
Exactly. Frame those not just as medical observations, but as specific points, specific facts that Samuel had to consciously, actively defy. That establishes his motivation much more clearly for the later stuff.
So the doctor's notes become hurdles he has to overcome or disprove in his own mind.
Precisely. Show that the self-harm later on wasn't just, you know, lashing out from trauma. It was maybe more methodical?
Methodical?
Yeah, like a deliberate attempt to invalidate the scientific story written about his body. He's not just reacting, he's systematically trying to build a case for the myth, using his own body as the evidence.
Okay, that makes the adult conviction feel less like a sudden break and more like a chillingly logical outcome of that earlier struggle.
Right. It deepens the internal conflict significantly.
Which leads nicely into the second point, actually. If the first is about when the myth took hold, the second is about how it physically manifested against the system trying to erase it.
You mean the branding versus the record?
Yes, the piece could really maximize its impact by explicitly contrasting the physical, you know, the indelible branding of the legend, against the clinical, the bureaucratic process of erasure.
Right now, it feels a bit like two separate tracks. You have the dramatic S-shaped birthmark over here.
And the bureaucratic fact of the new name, Samuel Kent, over there, presented as just sort of information points.
Yeah. And the weakness is it misses the chance to really dig into that tension between the mark he couldn't get rid of, the physical sign of the myth.
And the clean slate the system tried to impose on him via the record. So the suggestion here, building on that, is to actively weave them together. Put the concrete images of the physical marks, the S, the later scars, the disfigurement from the fire or traffic footage.
Directly up against the language of the administrative actions, the medical reports. Contrast the visceral reality of his body with the detached clinical terms in the file.
Okay, I see. So that physical tension drives the narrative.
You could, for instance, juxtapose specific descriptions of his injuries from the adult footage.
The burns, maybe?
Yeah, the burns from the fire footage, describe them, and then immediately cut to the objective, clean language from the medical record about his long-term nerve desensitization.
Ah, the documented numbness versus the active enduring fire. That contrast is stark.
It makes the physical evidence of his commitment, let's say, scream louder than the documents trying to explain it away medically.
So the myth becomes this internalized, like, anti-system crusade, and his body is the battlefield?
Exactly. Explore the idea that his adult behaviors weren't just trauma responses, though obviously trauma is there, but maybe also ritualized attempts.
Ritualized?
To reassert the cult's original divine mark over the assigned medical diagnosis. Frame his whole life as its ongoing argument. The branded S identity is stronger, more real than the sanitized Kent identity.
Tying the myth directly, inescapably, to the body. That makes it feel much more existential, less purely psychological.
Yes. It changes how we understand his motivation, I think.
Okay. That definitely lands harder. Let's pivot then to the ending, the final act.
The radio tower.
Right. To really elevate the existential weight there, the material could do more to subtly foreshadow how this specific case fits into the bigger theme. You know, the whole records freezing idea.
The failure of documentation to capture absolute belief.
Exactly. The final image itself is powerful. That pause at the radio tower, looking up before letting go, it works.
But the weakness, maybe, is that its meaning feels a bit contained, isolated to just him in that moment.
Yeah, it doesn't feel fully anchored to the themes of systemic failure, of erasure, that are hinted at throughout the source documents. It needs that wider context to really hit its full potential.
So are we risking the reader just seeing it as individual tragedy and missing the larger critique that the system meant to save him couldn't actually contain his belief?
Possibly. So the suggestion is to integrate, maybe, a careful reflection earlier on, something that sets the expectation.
What kind of reflection?
That the focus is on this failure, the failure of the documented method to contain the human myth.
Okay, and we could do that without making it too academic or preachy. Maybe a subtle line when discussing the initial rescue, the creation of Samuel Kent.
Like what?
Something like, note how records often freeze while lives keep moving. Just a quick touch point, suggesting the trauma documented back in 93 never stopped dictating his reality.
Like we saw with Real Wendy, perhaps? Where the file just couldn't keep up with her evolving beliefs?
Exactly. That quick link reminds the reader, this fits a pattern. This is another instance where the system, the documentation, falls short when faced with powerful internal conviction.
Okay, that grounds it. It tells the reader this isn't just a one-off story.
And then that structure makes the final act feel more like a deliberate statement against the system that named him.
Right. We need to make sure the description of that final moment, the pause at the top of the radio tower, really emphasizes this, that this act, caught on video,
is him creating his final piece of evidence, undeniable, something beyond any clinic note or government file.
Almost like the inverse of Klaus Richter, where the attempt to erase became the evidence. Here, he creates the evidence the system can't process.
Precisely. It transforms his death from just a tragic end into, well, an active final declaration.
And then that final line. He looked to the sky, and the sky stayed silent. It needs to feel absolutely inevitable.
The consequence of that whole struggle between the myth he embodied and the record that tried to define him. Leaving us with that silence, did he expect an answer? We don't know.
Yeah. A definitive silence that doesn't resolve the conflict documented over years. Okay.
So yeah, a really compelling look at belief versus bureaucracy. The branded myth versus the clean slate file.
Okay, great. So to summarize the main points for strengthening the material, first, really focus on improving the pacing and depth across that temporal bridge between age 7 and adulthood.
Make those intervening years an active conflict zone.
Second, deepen the tension between the physical branding, the S mark, the later injuries, and the medical or administrative erasure. Make the body the core of the argument.
Show the contrast explicitly.
And third, conceptually anchor that final existential act at the radio tower within the material's larger theme of documentation failure. make it his ultimate statement.
Right. So the actionable steps are, one, really flesh out that period in care, ages 7 to 18 roughly, as that central conflict point. Show the defiance against the record.
Two, use those specific, visceral images, the S mark, the fire footage, the language of the clinic notes, to drive that tension between body and file.
And three, structure the narrative so that final image at the radio tower lands as Samuel Kent's deliberate final piece of evidence, defying the system that tried and failed to contain his myth.
Excellent. Those steps should really sharpen the focus and impact.
Yeah, I think so too. We're definitely eager to see the revisions, see how these changes deepen the power of his story, his final defiance.
Absolutely. Please do submit the revised material back to us when you've had a chance to work through these ideas. We'd be keen to take another look.